Good morning, everybody. Everybody good to go? All right, here we are, episode 10. Yeehaw! Let's celebrate here. Anniversary. Coffee time with Carlos Machado. Episode 10. That's my claim to fame. Having you guys popping out, that's awesome. Don't forget, tradition, raise your cup of coffee, everybody. That's our salute.
Cheers.
For the day. Cheers. All right, so episode 10. Sponsored by... no other than St. Jude Miracle Oil. You guys are complaining, you are aching, you are bruised up, banged up. Guess what? Get the Miracle Oil. I don't have, where's the sample here, babe? Go get the Miracle Oil here. We're going to do some cool stuff right now. Make, you know, anybody who needs some help, have immediately healing experiences. Now, I'm just kind of talking funny here, but that's no joke, all right? I've had students left and right using the oil. And on June 10th, by the way, June 10th, put on your calendar, I'm going to have no other than Professor William Vandry with the magic bottle here. This is the genie bottle against pain the natural way, St. Jude Miracle Oil. And we're going to also have on June 10th, women's self-defense class. And I'm going to give you guys all the scoop. You know, we have like some charities and some, you know.
June 24th.
Oh, 24th?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on a second here. We're going to have to...
wait.
Okay, we're going to figure that
out. Yeah, we have to figure that out.
Yeah, all right. You told June 10th, young lady.
Yeah, it's June 10th, sorry.
All right, so...
Tim Crater is...
24th.
June 24th.
Gotcha.
That's why.
Somebody here on the side, spouse...
I have a name.
Got mixed up. Her name is Lindsay Machado, and we have a great relationship. We fight, we'll make it up. We fight, we'll make it up. And she always says I don't listen to her. You know, I have to have somebody else tell me. I always listen to her.
You
right?
Do not. Yeah.
All right. Let's go back here. Miracle Oil.
Yeah. Subject changed. Y'all notice that?
Yeah. Let's detract here. When you're talking to a wife and she starts to get on you, divert. Jiu-jitsu way. All right? But anyhow, the Miracle Oil, it's kind of like a small bottle, but it's highly concentrated. You put a few drops, and man, that sucker gets into your system. And you mix it with olive oil. That dilutes a bit, you know. But anyhow, let's get to the chase here. Thank you, Miracle Oil. Thank you, Professor Vandry, for such an incredible product. Facebook page, you check it out. St. Jude Miracle Oil or stjudemiracleoil.com. Got it? All right. So here right now, we're going to get the ball rolling here because you have to go with the flow. Okay, hold on. Sip of coffee here. The weather's nice in Dallas. When the earth is nice... you should stay in bed and sleep some more. I'm just kidding. Just go out there and grab it because the day is waiting for you. And a lot of times when I do these talks, you know, I kind of like to prepare. I've been reading some books, you know, and I intend to have book commentary and summary if I feel the book does what I believe it does, which is give me nuggets. The thing with books is like, and I mentioned that before, it's like you're digging. You kind of read the pages and then you... the author fills in with tons of information that you could get by without it. So now, and I don't like speed reading sometimes, depending on what the plot is. But if it's an informational book, speed read. Glance through the book. Go left and right, right and left. I had a biology teacher. They used to start the book of biology anatomy from the very last part. Was human anatomy, then he went to mammals, you know, to insects, invertebrates, and so on. That way you compare the blueprint of the most advanced organism all the way down and have a comparison. So maybe it's a good thing for you guys. What do you guys think about that? Start reading the book from the last page backward. I mean, I know if you're reading a plot, it doesn't work because you don't want to know the end before you go through the plot. But if it's informational, it's all free for all. You go gold nugget there. Because a lot of times, you know, for instance, the Primal Blueprint, which is another book that I like, or all those books on diet, the paleo diet and so on. A lot of times people, they get caught up in understanding the reason for all the things, the science. Man, see what the recipe is, see what the menu is, and see what food groups, what foods are good or foods are bad. Most of us have a common sense, right? Oh, man, the chocolate fudge cake last night. You know I'm going to run a marathon today. But anyhow, you know, you all have your common sense. The thing here is the lack of implementation when you read something. And I had somebody talk about jiu-jitsu, and we're going to get to it right now. The thing with jiu-jitsu is one of my students and affiliates, Stephen Roy, was asking me how much I train. Do you train a lot? Do you get, I'm sore all the time and this and that? Listen to your body. You know, when you're training in jiu-jitsu, if you want to have a long-term goal, it's not hard, and then hard. We get addicted to the endorphins. You can still have the endorphins going at medium pace. You know what I'm saying? You go at medium pace, and you can reach wonders. And then next day, you go harder. And then next day, medium pace. Some days, you just go there. When you don't feel like training, it's amazing. A little advice here. If you go to the gym and you feel like crap, start doing the drills slow with a little bit of resistance. It's kind of like a yoga, you know. And once you wipe your forehead and you have a little bit of sweat, that means you're on. And then you go on from there, the endorphins will kick in. And amazingly, you know, it's the magic of the endorphins will do its job. One thing that people sometimes complain, oh, my body's sore, but when I train, I feel better. That's the curse of the athlete. If you stop using it, you're going to start feeling it. You know what I'm saying? And the rolling becomes a therapeutical thing because your body's so conditioned. And the inflammation, you have to fight off turmeric. You know, you can get other supplementation. That's specifically the Wubenzyme, which is another very strong natural anti-inflammatory. If you guys go to Whole Foods, Garden of Life has a good one, Wubenzyme. You take 6 pills a night, you know, and you do that 2 hours after you eat. And those enzymes, it's right here. How do you kind of, just guys, you see, I'm pretty savvy on this internet thing. I always, when I do with my phone here on the Facebook Live, you get some calls here that pop in and out. I hate it. You know what I'm saying? We got to figure out something. I'm going to buy that camera that Jaime Barón told me. Is that the Mavi? M-E-V-I? You remember the Mevo, whatever that is? Anyhow, and I'm going to talk to you guys because today's Q&A too. It's not just me ranting and venting. It's about interaction here, all right? Any of you have reached out to Plateau in jiu-jitsu or sometimes you feel like, let's see here, my assistant is going to help me out here, Mr. Chris Garcia. By the way, Chris Garcia is doing photograph work. And I'm going to give you guys at the end a little bit of an info on him. But go ahead, anybody else that wants to pop out on Instagram as well?
I have a good question from Jose Luis Perez.
Jose Perez has a question, my friend from Mexico. Love you, my brother.
I don't feel like a strong purple belt and want to improve. He had neck surgery last year and has been off the mats for that year. Any suggestions on how to deal with that?
All right, so there are two things here, Jose. Whenever you have an injury, the beauty of jiu-jitsu, you can work around it. Don't let anybody get you in a headlock or dunk your head down the ground. All right? I have one of my students, Travis Luter, who has had issues with neck from wrestling practice back in the old days when he did jiu-jitsu. He was already in the midst of his MMA career. I remember one time he had a severe neck injury because I think he landed on the mat due to a takedown. You know, he was sparring hard. And that messed up his neck big time, you know. And it's something that you have to always be watchful. It's not the training. It's how you train, Jose. You cannot go hard all the time, especially if you're a year off. What do you mean you're not a strong purple belt? You are the instructor of your gym. You're an awesome guy. It's the knowledge of how to make other people good and better that matters. It's not you being the best in town or being able to beat up everybody that's in your gym. There are instructors out there. They're not the strongest fighters or the best fighters in the turf, but they can prepare anybody to be an awesome instructor. So let's kind of separate this thing once and for all. It's awesome to be a great fighter and kick butt. Yeah. But that's an ego thing, and I don't mind. You shouldn't take advantage of getting good at anything that you do, including becoming a good fighter. You should. But if you're a teacher, number one is being the best teacher. Because, you know, I tell you what, You come here to fight me. I'm like a little old Carlos Machado here, the Yoda with the cane. Do my move right there. Can I fight you with my body? I look to my side. I have an army on my right of black belts. I have another one of black and purple. And I say, son, come here. Get one of my black belts. Take care of that gentleman right there. Teach him a lesson. And if the student who wants to challenge me, you know, is beats that first black belt, wait, I bring another one. So he's going to have a line of good skilled students, you know, that I taught that can do the job for me. So you have to think like a general, my friend. You know what I'm saying? You're in the battle. Do you see the general going with the rifle in the trenches to fight the opponent, you know, and just kind of, you know, risk getting shot out? He's the brains of the whole battle. He's the one that makes the game plan and tell the soldiers what to do to duck their heads at the right time so they don't get sucked in.
Question
yes.
On Instagram. Oh. I do Japanese jiu-jitsu. Are you more into ground jiu-jitsu or standing up as well in terms of percentage?
Japanese jiu-jitsu question.
Jiu-jitsu.
All right. Hey, guess what? You know who's a black belt in Japanese jiu-jitsu here? My wifey. I don't mess with her. Kickboxer. You know what I'm saying? And Japanese jiu-jitsu. Honey, I love you. All right. So the thing with Japanese jiu-jitsu, ground, standing, down the ground. I tell you what, you should do it all. Like yesterday, my warm-up was takedowns. We do the boss stance, chest to chest, fumble. And then we do headlock throws. We do osotogari, hopping osotogari. Oh, hacks that... don't forget, guys, jiu-jitsu hacker. We're going to talk about that in a bit. All hacks that make easy for a big guy, small guy, to do the takedown nice and safe. You don't throw the guy too hard. So, naturally, Brazilian jiu-jitsu is a to-go-for move. You want to go for the kill. So, basically, if you take somebody down, you're not going to get up and start overstanding again. You go until you get somebody in the transition, in the submission, and go from there. So, but, of course, BJJ takes more time on the ground because that's where the chess is. If I take somebody down, I cannot just finish the guy, you know, in a second. I got to work my way out. And then if we stand up, we do it again. And the self-defense included, you know. The same difference between doing a hip throw and blocking a punch and doing a hip throw. It's pretty much the same move, but you're just blocking a punch before you go. Next.
There's a question from Corey McCoy on Instagram.
Corey McCoy on Instagram. Give it up, Corey.
I do MMA as well as BJJ.
Okay.
How often do you think I should switch my training or stay consistent?
All right, so Corey, you're talking about you do MMA and then you do jiu-jitsu. Well, one thing that was a question that Kelly Reif had, one of our students out of Stryker Martial Arts in Virginia. Shout out to Stryker! She was saying that she was doing MMA before the jiu-jitsu class and then she did the jiu-jitsu class. And in her case, we're working against her because she was kind of compounding everything all together and she didn't perform as well on the jiu-jitsu part of the training because she spent too much of her energy and concentration on the MMA. It's a juggle. I remember Saint-Pierre, when he was on his peak, one of the things he was saying is like, when he does wrestling, he does wrestling. When he does striking, he does striking. When he does groundwork in BJJ, he does groundwork in BJJ. So he's really strong believer that you should focus deep on each other disciplines. And of course, you do the MMA sparring to put it all together. But it's not like you're training everything at the same time. You're putting together what you trained individually because you want it to be at a higher level on each of those individual disciplines. There's no such a thing as jack of all trades. Nowadays with UFC, you have the guys that do the basic work. They do the striking, the grappling, the wrestling, the jiu-jitsu, and then put it all together. And then you have the guys that they kind of go deeper on each of those disciplines, and sometimes you have your ace. Demian Maia, he's a jiu-jitsu guy. He's not going to go, he's going to learn the striking and the wrestling, which he's doing, the wrestling a lot more lately. His takedowns are improving, and he ups his game on his grappling setup. So you have, in addition to being deeper on each of the disciplines, you got to know what your ace is and build your game upon what your strengths are, and of course, what your opponent's weaknesses are. Anybody else?
David Feiner.
What's up, Dave? Hey, Dave, thanks so much, man. Take me now. Dave was funny. Hey, Dave, can I tell that? There was a monument, a war monument, and apparently it's cordoned off. You have a sentinel, a guard that watches that thing. And I was doing like a Facebook Live, I guess. And I almost got inside the perimeter that was too close to the guard that was watching the monument. And I saw other two soldiers kind of coming around. I guess they wanted to kick my butt out of the cordon off zone. And Dave Viner saved me. He said, "Hey, Carlos, I don't think you should go that close to that fella right there because those guards are coming your way here." Thanks, bro. You know, that's all I need to get kicked in the butt by the nice serviceman from my beautiful neighboring country, Canada.
He's asking, when are you going to do another day, another rest?
Oh, you guys want to see a rap? Hey, I might do a little rap towards the end. How does that sound? I'm an improv guy. People have been asking me here, because my brother Higa now, he's the hip-hop of the Machado Brothers. Can you believe that? Millions of views, Higa. You know the way to do it in Hollywood, don't you? So you get that beautiful girlfriend that's the producer behind you. See, he can got all the fame. But whoever did the whole production was Miss Lorna right there. I know what you're up to, brother.
Love you, Lorna.
You make people do the work for you and you get the claim? I'm just kidding. So he can pretty much, he had Australia flag and Brazilian flag. And he was like, another day, another raspagem, which means to sweep in jiu-jitsu. Another day, another raspagem. And then he had Australia and Brazil here. Australia, Brazil, Australia,
well,
Brazil.
He made the song for friends.
Yeah, you have to understand the context. John Will, who's a beloved friend, he lives in Australia. He's 60. John Will, I know I didn't send you a birthday, but I love you, bro. You're proud of you. So he made this video, and it caught John Will completely by surprise. Apparently, his family knew all about it. And after they celebrated his birthday, took him to a room, the big flat screen. And the video was already prepped with Higgins' image right there. And then they played the video. And John Will, you know, I have to say that he was emotional. You know, I mean, that's a very nice. I mean, Higgins didn't just do a video. He went and produced it. He took the time. You know what I'm saying? You know, that shows that you mean, you know, what you say. And I appreciate that, Higgins. I love you, brother. Who else is there?
I have two questions, actually.
All right.
One from Instagram and one from Facebook.
Hell, it's Instagram and Facebook at the same time. Pick one.
Kind of the same. They're kind
all
of the
right.
same.
All right. Tie it up.
Do you think there are there's too much attention for sports jiu-jitsu instead of self-defense? The other one over here says, do you suggest doing traditional jiu-jitsu tournaments, or is there a value in doing sport jiu-jitsu tournaments? They're kind of the same.
All right. So the tradition is the Japanese?
Or limit with points.
Okay. All right. So let's say this. Ideal, perfect world. No points, no time. But the thing is, the reality is, like, when they started Matamoros, when they do the EBIs, they have the ADCC, you know, tournaments, you know, and they all try to increase the time or favor the rules towards one person submitting the other. And still, when you have two skilled opponents that don't want to go all out from the beginning, they want to strategize, you're going to see that stumbling, that stalling, that kind of, like, when I was watching the ADCC trials, West, you know, we had Buchecha, Lovato, and a bunch of other guys fighting and stuff. It's the nature of the game that they have to play the chess, and they just sometimes go enough to make the win, you know, in a strategic way. You know, and of course, I think ideally we should do... What do you guys think about doing tournaments in a different way? We have these two guys that are really good guys, but... Realistic, if you put all those guys to fight at the same time with no time limit, maybe you're going to run out of time. You have those venues rented out, or maybe not. Maybe, you know, they're going to go all out and submit one another. But the point is, they have to wear each other out, and they have to play their chess. You know, like if you see two awesome chess players going against each other, you know, they kind of make the moves sometimes conservatively, and one starts to get the upper hand, and then the other one catches up. So it's not like the pace is going to go indefinitely. Especially the guys nowadays, they are a lot more conditioned. A lot of, you know, stronger. Some of those guys, you know, they could do a little juice in the morning. I'm not saying who or where, but if they do an effective dope testing, you know, you're going to see some guys. I know some guys got caught in the IBJJF when they first started, but I think they get more lax with, you know, you know, there's that publicity thing. Okay, oh, they're doing like, you know, the UFC, the same thing, you say that. But you see a lot of guys in the UFC, my goodness. Those guys look like monsters, you know. But anyhow, I'm not going to say names or create controversy yet. Wouldn't it be great if you just pick up the guys that you want to have the dream match and you schedule a time for them to pay them. And they go into a school with the video cameras and let them go like they're rolling, you know, and see who gets who and make a better of three. And so you can watch real jiu-jitsu then. You know, if you watch some tapes, if you go and see like Kenyon Cornelius and Marcelo Garcia, they're in a seminar and they're going against each other. You know, it was a great sparring session. A lot of things going on. I think that's real jiu-jitsu, the traditional way. I'm not sure if that's the question. Now, sport and jiu-jitsu. Sport, the difference between sport and self-defense, slap the guy in the face. You know, you're not going to punch your opponent when you're training. But just kind of, you know, fake slap, fake kick. You know, if you're on the mount, instead of just doing a loop escape, the guy has to slap you gently, you know, and you have to block or take the guy's balance off. So you have to have, it's the focus, you know. And sometimes, though, if the guy doesn't know how to avoid a punch when he's doing a jiu-jitsu move, then that's a problem. You know what I'm saying? And everything has to do with balance. If the guy has no balance, he cannot hit you, or if he hits you, he won't hit you that hard. Because sometimes I tell you what, bro, if the guy's on the mount right there, it's raining on your face. It's raining punches, not rain. And in real life, you got to really figure out fast how you can suck that guy close to you or break the guy's balance so he doesn't have the stability. You know, but there's a way, if there's a will, and we're all good with it.
I have a good question on Instagram.
Instagram.
I'm 44 and started back to school in January. I'm starting back to school in January to get my degree. Not able to get my gym,
okay,
RIMA, until I graduate in December.
Okay.
Rima.
All right. Big shout out to Rima.
What can I do alone at home so I don't lose much of the groundwork?
All right. This is something that I think you should have. A piece of mat, or at least a cushion. Floor with some carpet. Get the coffee table out of the way. Make sure you know. And you kind of blindfold yourself. And you have a script of the techniques. Put like thick knee pads. You know, wrestling. There's some neoprene fluffy knee pads that you use. So you can kind of knee on a hard surface. And you don't feel a thing. If you want to have wrestling shoes. So you don't burn your toes on the carpet. And you just kind of, it's like a yoga jiu-jitsu. You imagine, you visualize what the moves are. And when you go, sometimes you go slow. Sometimes you squat and hold your stance in a little bit. You're conditioning your body. But at the same time, your mind, it's kind of like a 3D move. You know, a 3D movie. And if you're visualizing and doing and going through the sequence. And you don't start big the sequence. Sometimes you make four moves. And then from those four moves, you keep adding up here and there. I'll give you an example. You're passing the guard, you kind of hold a stance, hold a tray, and then you pretend you're going for a knee ride, get to the side, you switch your base, get to the mount, and then you switch your base to the S mount, and you pretend you're going for an arm bar. And I know this terminology for some of you might be foreign. We can explain to you in a later time. I'm going to have this coffee time at my school as well, in Farmers Branch. So I have the mats, and we can have the conversation going anywhere, everywhere. It will make it visual. But visualization is a great thing. And the whole thing is, you want to condition your nerves, not your body about being in good shape, you know, sweating hard. No, it's all about when you want to condition the nerves so your reflex doesn't forget the moves. It has to be slow paced with a little bit of tension. And you kind of keep on doing it, keep your breathing. It's very mesmerizing. It's a great feeling. So that's my recommendation.
Miguel Garcia in 1999 says, please come to Beijing. He mentioned something up ahead as well.
Beijing. What's his name?
Miguel Garcia.
Miguel Garcia out in Beijing. Hey, brother, I want to go to China. Yeehaw! Let's make it happen. Private message me your school. Who knows? I'll talk to your instructor. I'll sweet talk him. Make you guys a deal. All right?
Do you suggest training gi for MMA, or should I train no gi consistently, or both?
All right, so that's
Corey McCoy MMA on Instagram.
Corey McCoy is talking about the gi, no gi training for MMA. By all means, you train with the gi too. I'll tell you why. The gi gives you sensitivity. And a lot of times in MMA, you have to deal, one, the fact you don't have the same number of grips. You cannot grab anything. You have to kind of adapt what kind of grip you're going to use. So I grab a collar or I cup my hand on the neck. You know, I grab a sleeve or I cup my hand on the elbow like an arm drag. So you have to know how you transition the grips. But one thing is your radar of your game becomes more expanded because when you're doing with the gi, you have to pay attention to so much more little things, and you feel more tied up a little bit here and there, and you take off the gi's, off of a sudden you're free, especially when you're sweating. You know, you get that scramble. So I think, but I would say I would do half and half, I think is a good measure. Because it does increase your sensitivity. And a lot of times when it boils down, you're going to feel things better. And when you're fighting in the midst of it, you don't have time to think, man. You're getting whacked in the head. The round is up. You know, second round, when you fight somebody in the first round, he's more a little more dry. It's easier for you to pull the grappling moves and holds. The longer the round goes, the more slippery it gets. So you see a lot of times guys getting great positions and the other guy sleeps out and they think it's just lack of skill. No, man, it's the nature of the beast. It's almost like the guy's greased up with all that sweat. Okay, go ahead.
Johan Smoothies on Instagram says, hello from Holland.
Hello from Holland. What's his name?
Johan_Smoothies.
Johan_Smoothies. What's up, my smoothie brother? Awesome. Love to my Dutch friends. Can't wait to visit you guys there. I've been to Holland once. I loved it. Somebody has a question recently, preparing mentally. What was that? On Facebook?
So Brian Ashland asked, mentally, how do you prepare to face an opponent who has beaten you before?
Oh, that's a good question. How do you go against somebody that has had the better of you in the past? Okay, so you pick one thing, just one thing that the guy did. I mean, of course, you have that kind of remembrance, you know, that memory. Oh, man, I didn't do well. That guy's really good and this and that. But in the end, break down one thing that the guy did that was critical when you guys had the match previously. And you try to get really good countering that particular thing, you know. And then from that point on, it's one less edge maybe that the guy will have, even if the guy beats you again. And then you follow up the process the same way with whatever else, you know. So it's a game plan. It's not just a mental plan. The mental, you're going to always have, but you're going to have to stick to your game. I think, you know, that visualization thing with the blindfold and you're going through the scripts, you know, so your nervous system is adapting. Sometimes you spar with your training partner, in particular, focusing on the skill that you're trying to improve for you to face whoever it is that you're going to go against that has had the better of you in the previous match. And once your nervous system adapts to the whole mobility and the motion of the technique, it doesn't matter how you feel. You could be scared to death. When the bell rings and you touch your hands on the guy, you're going to do the daredevil move. You know, daredevil. Hey, by the way, daredevil is awesome, isn't it? So that's my 50 cent right there.
I have another Facebook here.
Facebook fellas.
All right. Richard Garrison asked, I recently rolled my six-year-old into BJJ, and I was wondering how to keep a good balance between discipline and fun.
Good balance between discipline and fun?
The kid is
6 years old, right? So has he had discipline issues before? Because a lot of times when parents put kids in any martial arts, one of the main attractions is parents sometimes they have a different setup at home, and I'm not judging anybody. Some parents, they give more room for the kids to express themselves, and some kids go the extra mile and slap the mom in the head or cuss at the dad, or they're too overly introvert, or they don't do the homework, they don't make their bed. I don't know at this point in time if there are too many things going on in the kid's life. You can turn a kid who is six and starts martial arts from being in a situation that changed completely for the better, you know, in a week or in a month. It's a long-term process that you see the change gradually increasing. So the kid, one thing that I feel parents do that I don't agree with, when kids start to really enjoy jiu-jitsu and have fun with it, and a lot of times the parents want the kid to be more disciplined, or they start to blackmail the kid. If you don't do this, I'm not going to take you to jiu-jitsu lesson. Not knowing that by take them to jiu-jitsu is the way, or not jiu-jitsu alone, but any martial arts, for the long run, is going to have an amazing effect because it's going to bring more maturity to that kid. And of course, the instructor will do his part, hopefully, to kind of instill the kid into the direction where eventually things are going to... Because I've seen kids, man. You have a range. Kids that are very well behaved. Kids that are like nightmare. They're being kicked out of schools left and right. So how do you kind of... You bring people to the middle. You know, you kind of go gradual, slow and steady.
Too, with the instructor working with the parent.
Yeah, and it's a team effort.
Yeah.
A lot of times what happens, the instructor does the job.
Then the kid
of helping the kid get focused, get more disciplined. And then when the kid goes back home, whatever the structure is, it creates, you know, it counteracts
yes.
the work. So as long as parents and instructor are aligned for the best interest of the kid,
yeah.
I think we have a winning combination.
Yeah.
I have one on here that's actually kind of the same for both, but it's...
Okay.
What are your opinions on beginners training leg locks? That's on Instagram. But the other one over here on Facebook actually asked, what are your thoughts on leg lock game being so popular now and how
okay.
does it fit into your game?
Okay. So people talk about leg lock and then beginners. Any submission for beginners is a matter of knowing the consequences. And one thing you understand is your joints, like if you pop an arm, if you do an arm bar, you can heal fast. You know what I'm saying? No problem. Chokes. You know, you tap right away when it gets squeezed. But when you have the knee or the ankle or, you know, and you twist, you know, especially with heel hooks, the problem with heel hooks, it targets two joints at the same time. It messes up your ankle or it can mess up your knee or both. So it's a position that a lot of times, because the beginners are more spastic, a lot of times they don't know the self-control when they go for a move. So you can always kind of emphasize. You can set up fast, but always end slow. Finish slow. You don't even have to tap the guy. So a lot of times, if you're doing leg lock and you're a beginner, my recommendation is you get the guy in the position, hold it, whether it's, even if it's a heel hook, which is a very dangerous submission for beginners, you don't tap them. If you get it, you let go, get it. Just work on the setups, not on the submission, because it's actually more important for you to know how to get to a position than the finishing itself. And that way, if leg lock is a game that's prevalent at your school, you diminish the risk of somebody either going too fast, which sometimes happens, or somebody not tapping fast enough, which is another thing that happens a lot in leg locks. They resist to the point that they feel they can endure. But usually when you feel like you want to tap to a knee bar or to a heel hook, the ligaments have been hyperextended already. Leg lock is a must to know, not just because it's a great submission game, but it also gives you a little sense on know your enemy. If you want to be able to defend something, you should learn how to do it. So I think in any school, you should have.
It's funny because like jiu-jitsu is kind of like clothing. It's always been there, like the ankle lock, leg lock game, whatever. It's just kind of come back in style.
Yeah,
it's not new. It's just back in fashion. You know, like
there are like trends that happens with the tournaments.
Yeah,
I remember back in the old days, the omoplata was being prevalent. If you saw a lot of the matches, man, a lot of them applied. Then from the leg attacks, the knee bars became the more go-to move. And then eventually they came with the toe hold, which kind of, you know, falls. So you see a lot of guys, you know, like Leandro Lowe, I guess, fellow from, I forgot his name, on the World Championships in the open class. And the last Pan Am's IBJJF, and he went to the toe hold. You know, and it's just something you have to be aware of. You got to put on your radar, you know, in regards to leg lock. I think it's important.
Yeah.
Okay. What's up?
See, David Garcia had one a second ago. I wrote it down. He said, what's the difference in how to view technique as a pure student versus a student wanting to teach later on in the future?
All right. So what's the difference between learning as a student and learning with the intent to teach? The thing here is you can know all the moves, but how do you break it down that anybody that has no experience whatsoever or somebody that has some experience, like I sometimes have to teach a white belt on my left and a black belt on my right. I teach the same move, you know, let's say an oop escape. And the understanding of the white belt, it catches right away. You have to go to the core of the technique. Out of everything that you're going to teach in regards to a specific technique, what is the core of the situation? In the mount position, for instance, the upa, a lot of beginners have a hard time. It has to do with controlling the balance of your opponent and learning about lines. Your head is the compass. You know the compass points north? Yeah, your head is right there. So a quick, in a nutshell, if I want to grab the guy's shoulder and his head is off to one side, I cannot roll him over until his head gets even or pass in front of my head. So it kind of like, so that way when you roll, the guy's weight goes with you. What I see happening a lot of times, you're trying to do a move, and this doesn't matter if you're a white belt or a black belt. If you understand about lines, you can make your technique work so much more, because it's like the green light and the red light when you're crossing the street. You get the technique set up, but it's not the right time to do the move until you align your body in relation to your opponent or training partner. That way, when his head is off to the side of the shoulder I'm grabbing, the move goes black or white. It goes all the way. Yes.
One thing that I've noticed just being married to you forever and you having instructors coming in and working with students is taking that black belt, new black belt instructor that's wanting to teach for a living, and getting them to dumb down that arm bar that they've been perfecting for 12 years, to back down to a white belt level arm bar.
That's another thing too. A lot of times you know a move that you have a lot of steps that you have to go through to learn and perfect. And then you want to teach exactly the same way with all that sophistication to a guy that doesn't have the time, hasn't had the time to go through all the steps. So you got to kind of, in a nutshell, cut down to 3 steps.
But that's
whatever that is. And make that as basic, as simple as possible. And as he goes through that first stage, at a later time, you teach the additions and the other steps to sophisticate the move. What I see happening is like, you teach right away from the beginning an S mount, arm bar, you know, clamping the leg and doing like a double attack from the mount. So there's so many things. People shouldn't remember all the details. They should remember what's the core. Mm-hmm. Body positioning, body alignment, and execution of the move. 3 steps. If it takes more than 3 steps, it's too long if you're teaching a beginner. Next. Warming up here.
I have one over here on Facebook. It says, what do you think of trying to put together a roll in a park once a month?
Oh, man, that sounds awesome. Hey, guess what? You know what I had in Brazil? I used to live in a home up in Teresópolis, up on the mountains, 2 hours away from Rio. I had this grassy soccer field. I had this big old canvas. How many of you have rolled jiu-jitsu into the night? You had like a full moon? That was like just enough light for me to see the eyes of my opponent, you know? And we were just going there, training partners, sweating and stuff. I think it's awesome. Problem here, I think sometimes is in Texas, when the weather gets nice enough for you to roll in the park, unless you do it in the morning or maybe late afternoon, it gets freaking hot. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And make sure the city doesn't give you a ticket, because sometimes, you know, and you get the liability issue sometimes if you're in a public place. And
speak some Portuguese. You know. You got your Brazilian fans on here.
Olá, Brazilian friends. What's up, galera? Como é que vai, rapaziada? Fala aí pro pessoal do Brasil para join coffee time, my Brazilian friends. What's up?
Instagram, Corey McCory MMA. How do you feel about kung fu or those kinds of arts, quotation marks?
Sure.
Do you consider those a fake art?
What are you talking about, man? Kung Fu, I have friends that do Kung Fu. I love the circular, you know, movement and stuff. Of course, their focus sometimes tend to go in a specific direction, and different schools might have a different approach. So it become kind of, in some places, you have that Tai Chi kind of approach that gives you more of like a yoga-like exercise. I think it's tremendous. I have guys that do Jiu-Jitsu that go do Tai Chi, and they love it because it kind of strengthens their core, you know, they work the breathing. It's kind of like meditative, you know, and stuff. But like I said, with everything, depending on what your focus is, you should select whatever it is that gives you more of what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And the problem when you start to judge, you know, if you put Kung Fu in perspective, or any Chinese martial arts, with Jiu-Jitsu, with Judo, with kickboxing, Japanese Jiu-Jitsu, wrestling, MMA, it's a whole mix, you know what I'm saying? And the thing is, in MMA, you got to shed everything and select the few things of each of those disciplines that will serve you the most for whatever your purpose is, which is not getting whacked in the head, minimize the risk, and ensure survival.
Well, not only that, but like so many modern day techniques derived from those original kung fu moves. So.
Yeah, back in the old days, like if you see like books in the martial arts, they didn't have the same number of people that do martial arts compared now. So what happened is the level of knowledge, the increase of the learning curve, everybody's more knowledgeable today. If you were a blue belt today and you competed as a purple belt 20 years ago, probably you'll be able to beat most of the purple belts. Just the transitions that have been added, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't change the core of jiu-jitsu then. But it's just that today you have more variations, more setups. People are more well-conditioned, you know, and so on. So
Kiko Ju, there are many instructors that rule out on Instagram, that rule out everything but jiu-jitsu. I personally think there is always a small detail in every art that will help me in my game. Agreed.
I'll tell you what, man. You know one thing that I still want to really get good at? The taekwondo spinning kick to the head. Holy cow. And man, with my jiu-jitsu, if I'm clinching that sucker and he wants to move away from me, I swear to God I want to get that. Because I know when the boy does that, like with both hands covering his eyes. But, you know, there's a timing and a speed on that thing, man. That thing, you know. So don't discount. Sometimes they're nuggets. It's like reading a book. You have a lot of pages, but there are some pages that you're going to get gold nuggets that are going to increase your knowledge to another level. I think the martial arts offer that too. You're going to get some gold nuggets. And, of course, you cannot be a master of all.
No.
You got to pick whatever is the martial art that it's kin to you and focus on that. But that doesn't mean you're going to discourage others from doing other things, because I think that, you know, my kid, Colton, for instance, he wants to do kickboxing now. I mean, I think he's awesome. Yeah, he's pretty good at spinning kick already as it is. So I'm like, if I cannot be the dad that I have the spinning kick, I'm going to be proud of my son. I'm going to live my life through my son's, you know, prowess. If Colton does the spinning kick, I'm happy, despite the fact that this old fart here can barely lift my knee these days, you know?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, we always tell people jiu-jitsu complements. It doesn't conflict with other styles.
Yeah.
It only complements.
Yeah. Another question here. I think I saw Rivera's have a question.
Yeah, here's one on Facebook.
All right.
How can white belts and blue belts better learn not to use brute force or be so focused on trying to submit someone versus learning the fundamentals and flow of jiu-jitsu?
All right, so white and blue, sometimes they use brute force. Yeah, I know, guys. I'm going to be on them at my gym. It's just like right now we're doing a lot of flow drills, and I call that the snowball theory. You do one move, then you do the second move, and then before you do the third move, you do move one and two again. And then you go from move number three, you do move one and two and three, all at a medium pace. And you kind of get the key points. And when you do a transition, if you get stuck in something, let's say guard, and you cannot pass the guard, I cannot work your side escape or your side control attacks. So we kind of transition that a little bit. I think there are some core situations that white belts and guys that use strength have to get used to. I think they think they have to move all the time. And I like their theory, keep your friends close, your enemies closer. You know, so sometimes, okay, through the match, you know, I'm kind of getting lost or spending too much energy. I'm going to hold the guy, keep the guy tight, catch my breath, and then think about it. You know, so there's times that you have to take a break through the training by holding on so you can kind of redirect your focus or refresh your wind, and then you go from there. A lot of times these guys, they have some level of stress. Mm-hmm. So the jiu-jitsu for them becomes escape. Mm-hmm. They really want to push hard because it's not the technique in itself. It's something that has happened to them before they came, or the way they have been brought up. If they have explosive wrestling background or weightlifting, it's like taming a beast. It's a process. Yeah, we're gonna work on that more, Gabriel. But definitely it's an issue. It's on the how to train part. Next. All right, everybody good there?
All great info. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw some of the guys here had a...
Oh, here's a good one.
All right.
Kiko Ju says, which is the most technical of the Machado brothers?
Somebody has asked, who is the most technical of the Machado brothers? Look, the best looking is right here talking to you, Carlos Machado. The sweet talker is talking to you. I don't need to be the best one. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to sweet talk them. They're going to let them let me beat them. You know what I'm saying? Go ahead. No. So what happened here is, you have a question? Or you want me to look at the camera? Okay, cool. All right, guys. So what happened here is each of the brothers have different games or moves that they do. What's amazing is you're suffering a level of misery when you go against any of... When I go against any of my brothers, I'm always suffering a little bit because they never make me comfortable. You know, you're always fighting through to make your game go. But it's a give and take. I try.
Yeah, that's why you got to. You know, like
when I was wrestling Higgin, I would go to California and grapple Higgin. I would spend a week there. The first two or three days, it was imagine like you fall off a ship and you're drowning in the ocean. So I felt I was drowning for the entire time. But I knew one thing going for me. I had the endurance to last. And in my mind, I was okay with it because I knew he was bigger than me. He has incredible skills, you know, one of the most amazing jiu-jitsu fighters that I've ever seen, my brother Higgin. So, you know, and I know how much nice he was or not, but he was not making my life any easier. He was really doing the smash game and stuff. But then once I went through that 2 or 3 days, I got used to the misery. And then for me, it was okay. I knew I would almost drown, but I'll find my way. And then I was able to do some stuff and at least make him sweat. So sometimes you have to be realistic with your goals. Going with Jean-Jacques, I never remember rolling with Jean-Jacques, a match that lasted less than 45 minutes. Because Jean-Jacques, never in my life, when we started training, he was not the one to say, okay, that's good, you know, and kind of stop out of his own initiative, you know, time out, you know, good. You are the one that had to say time out. Okay, that's good, John. So if I was too proud to say, because I guess if you're rolling with somebody for a while and if you are the one that says, okay, man, I had enough, that means you kind of, you know, you accept that mentally, okay, I want to rest.
Yeah, it's a tap out.
And I don't care who you are, you roll with Jean-Jacques, get ready for a long roll.
But no, when he does conditioning with Olympic athletes, he's toe-to-toe.
Yeah, Jean-Jacques has a condition out of this world. He's wrestling. I mean, his endurance is amazing. When he was, you know, even after he kind of slowed down his competition back, you know, towards the end of his last, you know, events, I remember him training with his trainers and had Lark Hamilton, you know, the surfer who was in incredible shape, guy, super athlete. And they're kind of, you know, had all the trackers, you know, like they're part of a track team, doing treadmill workout with Jean-Jacques, and Jean-Jacques was just doing the same workout that Olympic level athletes were doing. And Jean-Jacques was already past his mid-30s. You know, it was like, shoot, man, what a shape.
Are you in Texas on Instagram? Corey McCoy, are you in Texas? Where can someone go to train with you?
All right, RCJ Machado Farmers Branch Academy. Check it out. If you go to rcjmjj.com, you're always welcome. Okay, I guess we have another website.
RCJMJJFarmersBranch.com.
RCJMJJFarmersBranch.com. You meet the old fella here, Carlos Machado.
Or CarlosMachado.net.
Or CarlosMachado.net. That's my academy. And then the RCJ Machado general one for all the RCJs. RCJMJJ.com. And you can figure out where to go. Is that it? Okay.
No.
Just go to CarlosMachado.net and figure that out. I'm going to figure all the other websites later. Just the websites keep changing. Right.
Here's one on Facebook.
Facebook.
What are some breathing exercises I can do to improve my gas tank?
All right. You remember the choo-choo-choo like a train? Choo-choo-choo. So here I do 3 or 4. I'm resting the guy. Let's say I start training. You can do 3. Two shorts and one long exhaling. But when you really get the going, whether you're going to attack the guy or escape from something, you go 1-2-1-2. And always the last one is long. So I can wrestle like this. Things slow down when I hold down, then it go back to 3. And then when you start to slow down your pulse, you're kind of catching your breath, you can go 2. And then 1-2-3 again. The 1-2-1-2 is the one that you do when you're rolling after, you know, a couple of minutes. You got to keep that pace. Fast or slow, you know, and the 1-2-3 sometimes when you slow things down. That's what I do. The 2-2-2, brothers and sister, it sounds funny, but it feels pretty good.
Have one on Instagram.
What's up, breaking off, fellas?
How can white belts get better at no-gi when they're mainly training in gi?
All right, how do you get better with gi, no-gi? Okay, do me a favor. Do you have rash guard underneath you? Your instructor have a problem after you do all the gi training if you just kind of for some time take off and... One of the best training you can do is you keep the gi on and tell your partner to take off his gi. And you grapple. He can grab you. He has all the advantage. And you have to come up with all you need to do to kind of compensate. It's actually better for you than both of you without the gi. Because he's going to hold you, have an edge on you. So by the time you don't have a gi, your agility will be of a different kind. So that's the formula that I have. Check with your instructor, and then throughout the training, eventually your opponent takes off the gi.
Instagram. Do you, Paul Thomas BJJ, do you feel like the 50-50 guard or competitors ending up in that double pull position take away from the effectiveness of jiu-jitsu? Is unrealistic to fight guard to guard?
All right, so what happened here is a technicality question, all right? It depends on the tournament format. I think the 50-50, the problem with some of those guards that you're saying, Paul, thanks so much for dropping by, is it takes time sometimes for the guy to shake it off. And you're going to see a lot of guys that actually, they wait a little bit, they get an advantage here and there, and then they pull the 50-50. And even if they don't finish the guy with anything, they know it's going to take forever for the guy to shake it off. Mm-hmm. So I think the rules are what have to change. So make a 30-second rule, 50-50. If you don't get a submission or a sweep, boop, get back up again and go from there. You know, keep it on. Don't let the match get stuck. You know, in real life, a lot of times if it's strikers allowed, a lot of times you got to watch out when you do 50-50 or when you do other guards because, you know, you can get hit.
If
in the
you're
process.
Not Ryan Hall, he's the mess.
Oh, yeah, Ryan Hall, man. He's like a wizard. He spins under you like a tornado.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's all good. For the average humans?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's a technicality more than anything.
Yeah. Ryan Hall's, like, freaking awesome.
Who else?
I have one on Facebook.
Facebook.
How often are you rolling these days, and how has your body held up over the years?
All right.
What advice do you have for the longevity in jiu-jitsu?
I like 2-1-1.
Learn from his mistakes, people.
Okay, 2-1-1. You go 2 medium pace days, 1 heavy. No, actually, I do the 1-1-2-1. I do mid pace, heavy, mid pace, and then I go heavy and mid pace. So I go every other day. So one day I go hard, the other day I go easier. Next day I go mid pace, and then I go hard the last time. So that way I have the weekend to recover. You know what I'm saying? You need more than one day to recover when you're Carlos Machado. All those mean guys I have to wrestle in Brazil, crazy Brazilians. But anyhow,
Romel Cardozo on Instagram asked, do you miss Brazil?
If I miss Brazil, you know, I haven't been there in 17 years. Hey, Brazilians, sorry, foi mal, galera, foi mal. 17 years, because, you know, I had a 5-year plan. I married a beautiful wife, and in 5 years, I had as many kids as I could. You know, I didn't have twins, but I had 4 in a row in 5 years. So when the kids are small and, you know, you don't go for a 12-hour flight trip to Brazil. And plus, in Brazil, I was waiting. You know, a lot of my folks came to the U.S., you know. But right now, we'll make plans for the near future to be there. My brother, he will be there in June with my cousin, Crawling Gracie, on the best awesome camp in the world, the most beautiful beach of Brazil.
Beach.
Sorry. I always have this problem, beach and bitches, man. Sorry. I'm not cussing. It's a PG-13 still, this broadcast. But anyhow, I think Brazil has amazing places. It's just I wasn't stable in the past couple of years, all the politics and stuff. And my mom doesn't tell me some good news over there, but it's an awesome place. My brother Roger Jean-Jacques went to see the Olympics, you know. What else?
Luis, thank you for my birthday wish.
All right.
I can't be married into this family and my family, the Thompson family, and not know my stuff. Come on now.
Holy God. Yeah. My consultant. Right? I have my consultant here, Lindsay Machado.
That's right.
What else is there?
Chris Massey joined Jiu-Jitsu Hacker recently, and I have another question here. Should you concentrate on a specific guard and get really good at that one, or work on a variety of guards?
Okay, so guard, 3 steps. Retention. Work on retention first.
I got a good one.
Keep with the retention. Make sure the guy has to spend a little bit of time working on passing your guard, because if you don't have retention, it's really hard for all the sweeps and submissions. And the second thing, concentrate on working on people's balance and stance. Instead of trying to go for any move, get good at, you know, retaining a bit. Some people like the sleeve game or the spider guard. I kind of keep my hips elevated, my legs movements. I try to sit up. When I grab the guy, I try to keep my shoulders off the ground. So the guy, I hang on the guy. You got to kind of transfer the weight and energy to the guy. Imagine the guy has to do deadlifts with you. He wants to move away. And the butterfly hooks, sometimes they work as a good retention strategy. So retain first, work on the balance of your opponent, and then from there you have the option to go for reversals or submissions. The warm guard sometimes is a cheat, it's a good hack, because you kind of wrap, keep the guy steady, you kind of work a limb, you know, and then from there you build it up.
Last one, then we gotta go. What has been the biggest challenge to running a successful martial arts business?
Oh, man.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm.
Oh, somebody asked me, what's the challenge of running a business?
I would have to
and make it successful. Okay.
Staff.
It is.
Big one.
Will always be.
Yeah.
People that you work with.
Yeah.
That's number one. So there are two things that happen. You develop a relationship with somebody the wrong way from the start. It's not a business relationship. It's a personal relationship. So if the person does the job or not, you know, it becomes subjective. And you say, hey, can you work? Can you show up on time?
Can you clean the mat? Can you not be on your cell phone during class?
Can you not talk on the cell phone when you're teaching and you're too nice and stuff? You write down everything that's expected from the business. If it's not on paper, it doesn't count. Any laws in this country, you can do whatever it is, but it's on the paper. If you do this, it's wrong. You know, the judge will say, hey, bud, you're going to pay a ticket, you're going to jail. You know, so if somebody walks into your gym, could be your best friend. The conversation that has to happen is, these are all the problems of running a business, and these are all the things that we do to work with those problems. Read and initial every single item, okay? And then the check marks. Now sign over here. You keep a copy. I keep a copy. So when you mess up and you arrive late, or when you try to have a relationship with a student, and if you're an instructor, different things like that, and mess up the business, you're not going to say that you didn't know. Oh, I didn't know that, you know, arriving late would be bad. So you have those things, and then you have what to do about it. And a lot of times you give the guy first chance, second chance, third chance. You become too lenient. And I think it's a measure.
Years of chances, Carlos.
You know, me, I give second chance, third chance, fourth chance, and forever chance. And then when I realize it doesn't work, then it's a blow and nobody's friends anymore.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, you can't expect somebody to perform a job if you don't teach them.
That's right.
And a lot of times, my mistake as an instructor, I want to teach them to teach. That's nothing to do with the business. I want you to be an instructor that when you walk into the place, there's respect, you know how to take care of the business, mm-hmm. in addition to passing on a great class. If you're not an entertainer, you have no business teaching.
That's right.
Because if people are bored with your class, I don't care if you're teaching a wrong move that sucks. If you're a good entertaining, you know, instructor, guess what? They're going to love it.
They're
going to pay for a crappy move. You McDodgers from Brazil and the U.S. You suck, but damn it, you're good entertainers. You know? But so you have that. And then if you have that business part, and the other thing too is sometimes you know what to do and you don't. You get that card from the company, you keep buying dinner for all your friends, and you run out of cash flow. And then when it's time to pay a bill, you can't keep the place open because you're misusing the funds. Embezzlement! You're done! Jail time! But you don't have that because you're the boss. So you can do whatever you please. So there's certain things that need to happen. You know, so I feel like learn about the business like any other business and treat the business as a business. If you do that, I think for me, the biggest challenge is spending time on the business, not in the business.
That's right.
Because a lot of times you think you're doing business by being on the mat, doing the trivial things,
no.
The teaching, the cleaning of the school and this like that. Business happens before the school is open.
That's right.
You know everything you're going to teach. You know everybody what's going to do. You have an agenda. You have a calendar. You have staff training. You have to train your staff as you train your students.
That's right.
You tell the guy once, hey, this is what it takes to be successful. You do this, this, and this, great. And then you never meet the guy again. There's the law of complacency. Every 6 months, you can have the most awesome employee. He's going to start becoming complacent.
We got to wrap it up.
You know?
You got a minute
okay,
left.
Okay, I have one last here. I'm going to do the shout-outs right now.
Yeah, do some shout-outs.
All right, guys. I don't know on Instagram who is there because I can't read. All my Instagram friends, thank you so much. Let me go over here.
Go quick. You've only got a minute left.
Okay. Delphi, thank you so much. It was great to see you. Robert Garcia, awesome. But James Chalady, Alfredo H.
Where's the Carlos rap? They want the rap.
Oh, they got one the rap? Everybody, you guys want the rap? Give me some likes. I'll finish with the rap. I was trying to do a shout-out. I'm going to have to cut to that.
You're about to lose it on Instagram.
Okay, hold on a second here. Chris Massey said something. I love the Jiu-Jitsu Hacker. Added details to my game. Recommends to everybody. We're going to see a Jiu-Jitsu Hacker later on. St. Jude Miracle Oil, my sponsor. I can't forget it. Okay, let's wrap here real quick.
40 seconds.
All right, let's wrap.
40 seconds.
Jiu-Jitsu. I love it. I hate it. When I'm tapping the guy, I'm the man. When I get tapped, I cry loud on my wife's shoulders. I have to grow up, but I can't because I want to win all the time. Jiu-jitsu, jiu-jitsu. I love it. I hate it.
You sound like a cheerleader, not a rapper.
Is that cheerleader? All right, let's go. Yo, yo, yo. All right. I like to train because I like to learn so I can use my moves. Tap out the white belts. White belts. White belt. Fresh meat. Fresh meat. White belt. White belt. Fresh meat. Fresh meat. And
you're down on Instagram.
Oh, shoot, man. We're going to next time. Take care.